Hey, good evening, and welcome to Untold Mysteries Out of Quarantine on UntoldMysteries.com and, of course, BBSRadio.com. This is, of course, another week with research in the ufology and research in the paranormal and mysteries, especially mysteries out of quarantine. As you know, our website, Untold Mysteries, has a kind of a network of people around the world, especially from Europe. And we're working now more together with ExoPolitics from the United Kingdom, and they're doing very well, I must say. You know, when you are looking for a kind of a face from who are you, what you stand for, what is your message, of course you have to be careful that you're not copycatting or, you know, saying things that is obvious in the world of ufology, on the world of mysteries. So you don't want to be a copy of someone else. You want to have your own identity. And then there was a discussion from what is now the European face or European voice on ufology and exopolitics. And for those who don't know what it means, exopolitics, you have to just Google exopolitics, and you will find out that it is started about in year 2000. Alfred Weber and Dr. Sala, they both are kind of the fathers of that word. Exo means extraterrestrial. And of course, politics stands for doing politics, but it's much more. It's much broader. And most people are aware that ufology are looking for to have an answer of something that is unidentified. Yeah, but the problem is, If you're only interested in the U of the UFOs, then and you say no, don't let discuss abductions, don't discuss politics, only the science of ufology. Let's go away from all those complex issues and focusing only on the U of the UFOs. But that in itself could be useful to a certain degree, you know, to be focusing on the substance and content only, and that you want to have the core information and the data, and to a certain degree that is nice. But has it helped us? Yeah, maybe we can philosophize on the content and how, what kind of technology is it? Is it free energy technology or not? Is it based on secret technologies and so forth? But we still have to wonder, is there a cover up? Is there another story, another bigger picture that most ufologists do not wish to discuss? And if you talk about contactees or abductees, then most people in the ufology scene have some difficulties with it, because then you have all those people who have outlandish and far-fetched theories and hypotheses and claims. For instance, if you claim that you are having a contact with some extraterrestrial, then the obvious reaction and response is, where is the evidence? Where is the evidence? That's the obvious responses from skeptics and also normal people as well. And as you know, skeptics are also normal, but not all of them. True skeptics are normal, but pseudo-skeptics are debunkers, and they are in town. They, you know, they're there to ridicule you, and they have a passion to do so. Sometimes they feel that, by the way, that if you are a debunker, you actually are maybe a true, honest believer in UFOs, but you cannot handle it emotionally. Maybe you have your own experience with it, and you cannot handle it. You are too emotional about it. And being so emotional makes you so against it. You see what I mean? So you are actually against your own experience. You want to deny your own experience, and that makes you so emotional. So if you have people who are sort, viciously attacking the UFO scene, it could be very well because they themselves had some experiences with UFOs. But they cannot handle it, cannot deal with it. And if the media or the politicians cannot handle it, we will. That's our job. But going back to the story about exopolitics and having a different face, your own identity, and in the search for the European face, and how can we be different than let's say the United States? And you have to realize that the United States is making a very strong point on how to look at ufology. Mostly it has the discussion about Area 51, discussion about, of course, the Roswell incident in 1947, how the Air Force dealt with it, and Project Blue Book, you know, all of that. All of that has a kind of a overshadowing how to interpret ufology and how to see ufology. So when you go to search in the search engines, look for ufology, you probably will hear most of it, information coming from the United States. But what about the world? Is there a, you know, let's say if you're living in the Netherlands, you watch English television or English-based movies, because it will be subtitled in Dutch, of course, but we're watching most of the time English movies, English-based. English spoken. Now, let's say I would live in France. Then I would, of course, have not an English-based education and upraising, and my viewing the television, national television, would be 90% French-based. And they have another colonial history, especially they have ties with the Arabian countries, because of their colonial history, and therefore they have some more interest in those nations and have a different perspective of those nations. Have more, not that I agree with them, but they actually talk about it more. You see what I mean? So when there's something strange is happening over there, they will report sooner than, let's say, when you live in the Netherlands. So we are actually influenced by the English-based thinking, English-based moving, English-speaking movies, or English-speaking documentaries, and so forth, and so forth. I've lived in the southern part of the Netherlands, in Limburg, at the border of Germany, and when I was young, I'm 41 years old now, but when I was young, I was watching German documentaries and German programs for the children. So I'm being influenced by two languages, that is the Dutch, the English, three languages, the English and the German. But most at that time, when I was living in the border of the Netherlands, near the border, Dutch people were actually more focused on the Dutch information and the English, and not so much from Germany. But because me having this effect of the Germany point of view, they are actually in documentary making much more thorough and deeper than most documentary makers in the world. You know, I don't know if people are aware, but if you're going to do some research in UFO documentaries made by the Germans, you know, it's amazing how far they go and how much effort they do to go look for the, you know, rare footages. For instance, they made a special on Roswell, of course, in Germany, and they found some footages I never saw before, and I have over 400 tapes, 400 VHS tapes on mysteries and suppressed news and UFOs. So I know what's out there. I mean, in average, you know, what most people will talk about and what will be ignored or what will be not be discussed and what will be discussed in the media, in the television, talk shows, news items, documentaries. And then, because of my collection, I have a kind of a view of what is out there in UFO documentary world. But when I see the German documentary makers, they actually have exclusives that you say, this is what I never saw before in other documentaries. So how do they do that? And why do they so much effort to make a more in-depth research? And why is that other most documentaries are scratching the surface, and then you compare this with other documentary makers, and they are more in depth. How is that? Why is that? And slowly, the Belgium and the British are catching up. So I must say that the Belgium and the British documentary makers are also catching up in the quality of the content, you know, of making thorough investigations and not making a documentary, let's say, in a week or two, and then they're finished. No, you know, doing more than a year research, for instance. Okay, I was talking about a face, you know, about who are we? What is the European face, and what's the difference? I must say, the difference should be, or that's what I want to be, is that we actually look for own cases on the European soil and come to maybe to a different conclusion. And that's not necessarily so. It doesn't have to be different, but it would be great if you can show to the world, let's say, we do investigations in France, for instance, because of France recently releasing official UFO reports from the government. They kept it for so long a secret, and now they allowed people to have access to official UFO files, especially from the military, pilot cases, police cases. And they're very interesting to investigate, and they kept it so long a secret. And there was always a so-called openness from the French, Jacques Vallée is a very famous person. He's also the co-advisor of the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It's not only Alan Hynek that had the influence on the movie of Close Encounters of the Third Kind from Steven Spielberg, but also Jacques Vallée. And he is a kind of skeptical guy. He worked in America, so he is maybe he's accepted because he was working there as a computer scientist, and also he worked for the NASA. And he was kind of looking for using the computer to catalog all UFO accounts from the world. So his attitude of Jacques Vallée was especially looking for physical trace cases, what a lot of people don't know. People think about ufology, that something strange is in the sky, you know, and you cannot don't know what it is, and that's it. And it could be anything. It could be, no, that's not true. Jacques Vallée was also researching Close Encounters of the Second Kind, and that is hard physical trace cases worldwide. And in his research, he came also into researching folklore and mythology, and not necessarily to downplay on the subject, to say that everything in ufology is only myth and just fairy tales. That's not what he meant. He said that maybe in mythology and in folklore and storytelling of the people, what happened long, long time ago, there is a overlapping or, how do you say this, correlation, that maybe what people could not understand, it's repeating. And now we use different tools or different words to describe what we see, because we are more educated and we have more vocabulary to use to describe what we see. But maybe in the past they saw the same creatures or the same UFOs, but they don't use the same words that we do. You see what I mean? So that's what he meant with mythology and folklore, but he was misunderstood. A lot of people thought, oh, he thinks that UFOs are just storytelling, fairy tales, people are making things up, and you know, that's what people thought when you want to compare it with that. But that was not the true reason that he wants to compare it. He believes that in mythology and in folklore, there's a truth of people reporting strange things to paranormal and so forth in the past. And of course, you will be attacked for it if you take it serious in the science. And think about it. You were attacked by science now if you think there's some truth in mythology. What about in the 1500s? If you believe in mythology, you will be burned at stake by the Christians because they say it's a heresy. It's demons and it is from the bad world. So therefore, it's never okay to discuss what people actually maybe experience, but have no words for it. And of course, things can be overestimated or making bigger than it really is, but there are genuine stories or genuine experience, and people talk about it, so there you have it. People talk about the paranormal or UFOs or mythology that could be partly based on truth. Same as the Trojans, you know, if you do some research about the mystery of the Trojans, they later discover that the myths about the Trojans are not based on talking, but actually they found evidence of it. But for a long time, they only thought that the Trojans were, the story about it was just a make-believe and, you know, a beautiful story and that's it. And then later they actually found evidence of it, that not all mythology is a lie or something. Or so there are examples of so-called mythologies that is based upon true happenings. Now that is important. Again, this is, do you wish to explore the mythology of European-based mythology? And do you think there's a connection there with UFOs? I think so. I think there is a connection with mythology and with folklore and what Jacques Vallée does. And therefore, the attitude of the French was much open in comparison with the Americans on ufology, on UFO research, and much broader, and also looking for physical trace cases. And what I also like about Jacques Vallée is that he was not afraid for the media. He was not making fun of people in the media. So the attitude towards UFO experiencers by scientists in French, on the French television, was not so attacking the eyewitnesses so much. There was not an agenda to ridicule people. Of course, you have the people who wants to ridicule people all the time. You always have them. But there was not a true effort to do so. You see what I mean? If you look at America and you look at history, what happened with ufology in America, there is a true agenda to ridicule the people. You know, you just have to study the Robertson panel. You just have to study who owns the National Enquirer, who funded the National Enquirer. It turns out to be the CIA. So if that is the case, then what's the true agenda of National Enquirer? It's to use certain data of ufology and blow it out of proportions, make it 10 times bigger than it really is, and everybody who do a little bit research knows that it is actually a fact. Wrap in lies. It sounds far-fetched what I'm saying, but it's really true. So what they do is they have certain basics or certain information that everybody can check out, and then wrap it full with lies around it, you know, and a lot of makeup belief and a lot of strange, outlandish stories that is so ridiculous. And when you mix both of them, then it has the most impact to discredit the core information. You see, that's the tactic they used. And the majority of the journalists in American press fell for it. They say, oh my God, the National Enquirer comes with the same story. Oh, you know, don't talk about it because you know it's all baloney. And that's exactly that how they want it to be treated, that it's all baloney. And the official reason to do so was started in 1942 in the L.A. Incident, that the L.A. had fired thousands of rounds of ammunition in the sky to shut down a UFO. So you just have to Google L.A., UFO L.A. raid, firing so much ammunition, ammo in the sky, and having no result. And in the scare of the Japanese and the Germans, they actually had to say to the public, yeah, we were firing in a balloon to calm down the public. You see, so in 1942, they had to have a cover story to calm down the public. And then, of course, the Marines and the Navy were not happy about this happening, and they were researching it, what the hell happened. So there were internal memos complaining from, okay, if you claim it to be a red balloon, why is it that you fired so long and you had no results whatsoever, and even six people died? Six people died during this all those animal coming down again. If you're firing shells, they have to go, but goes up, goes down. So, and that only for a weather balloon. You know, because of that LA incident, that there's also an audio clipping of it. You can actually listen to it, of CBS. And if you go to the documentary, theufomovie.com, so theufomovie.com, Jose Escamilla, I interviewed him recently. He actually has some clippings, of movie clippings of the true original firing on an unknown object in the sky. And they started from that point on to officially deny UFOs. And they used the same words and tools and rhetoric that they used on in 1947 when the famous case was spread to the world of a pilot who saw a UFO, and from that point on they call it a flying saucer. But actually, you can actually see documents from 1946 and 42 mentioning flying saucers as well, and also mentioning unknown objects in the sky, unidentified objects. So the term in ufology, they always say, yeah, it started in 47. That's this starting point of ufology. That's what you are learned, how to respond and how to think as a UFO researcher. It's not true. It's in 1942 and then 1946. There are even declassified documents mentioning UFO cases in Europe, and that there is a special Air Force department doing research in that kind of stuff, and it was just unexplained. So if you know that there is a special unit of the Air Force investigating unidentified flying objects. And what do you learn in ufology class? As if we have UFO classes, but you know what I mean. If you go to the average UFO researchers, they will tell you, yeah, it started in 47. That's what they tell you. But actually, the Air Force were investigating unknown objects in the sky long before 1947. So there are so many assumptions about ufology, and what is the true reason to keep it so as if you are in a straitjacket? You see what I mean? There is a way to deal with this topic, UFOs, and then someone will tell you how to interpret it and how to deal with it and how to see the so-called history of it. And then you have the exopolitics view. The exopolitics view is actually to look for if there are cover-ups. What is the military perspective? Do they have something to hide? And why? And what is the reason that it started? Are there certain policies that we're not aware of that we now can prove that there is a policy of denial or a policy of ridicule? And if you can back it up with the declassified document, what is then the response of the media? Do they wish to find out about this? Do they want to know about this? Or is it, no, don't tell me about that. Don't talk about politics. I'm only interested in the science. Don't come with conspiracy theories. I don't like that. It's too much. It's too complex. It's too, oh, my brain hurts. Oh, my God, my brain. You see? It's ridiculous. Everybody knows it's ridiculous, but there are so many people having self-censorship. You know, they don't like to discuss UFOs. Could be very well a very political one as well, a military one. So, you know, if a part of the UFOs turned out to be alien spacecraft, I always said to the national media, televisions, when I was on television, I always stated that if a part of the UFOs turns out to be alien spacecraft, it has political, social, economic, religious, military consequences. I cannot name other subject that has so much resistance of those five power structures, and I'm even not mentioning the medical mafia, the pharmaceutical mafia, not happy you to find out that there are cures for cancer and so forth, cures for AIDS, because they are out of a job. So the pharmaceutical mafia are there because you have disease. You see what I mean? So they have the job because you have a disease. Oh my God, this is ridiculous. But it is happening, and they are making money because you have a disease. And if this can be solved, they are actually, it's their worst nightmare for the pharmaceutical mafia to find out that there is a cure for so much thing. So that there's also a power structure in itself that doesn't want this to come out. And then you have, of course, what about our age? I mean, we are programmed to think that maybe we can only live to 80, and if you are happy, you can go 100 years, and there are exceptions that you are 110, but 120 is outrageous. But why is it that we are so programmed to believe that we have to die, let's say, within 100 years, and that's the lifespan of the average lifespan is about 70, and if you are 100 years old, then you must be so happy because you lived well and healthy to come to that point. But who said so? Maybe we can live, let's say, 300 years or 400 years, and that we are not having access to the right information that they actually cover up because they are afraid of the population bomb. You know, let's say that everybody lives longer. That means that it will cost the government much more money because you actually are pensionate, and if you're pensionate, you get money because you invest in yourself every time when you pay taxes. A part of that money is reserved for you to have a nice life after you're pensionate. Now, let's say that you live two times as long. So that pension funds have to pay you more. You see what I mean? Now, that in itself is not... They will say that we can never, ever going to pay that if people are going to live longer. And then that was an argument in itself, that there could be a conspiracy. And then the argument is, if we are living longer, there will be too many people on the planet. You know, that people would say, oh my God, then we are a note. And I think, let's say that we all get 200 years old instead of 100. And we will be 200 years old. And that is normal because of new technologies, breakthrough technologies, and suppressed cures being released, and free energy being used, free energy for Nikola Tesla, and much more beautiful stuff coming out, and that the paranormal healing is accepted, and alternative medicine is being treated okay and treated honestly instead of being treated as a disease itself, and that pharmaceutical mafia is exposed of the abuse of power, and that they're not influencing the media anymore. Let's say we will live 200 years old. What will be the outcome of that? I guess we would go from 6 billion people to 12 billion people in very fast. You see, that is a scenario that maybe on a higher level, and I talk about the globalists, the one who are on the top, knew about. There is actually a report written by Cyrus Vance. He was one of the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, and Bilderberg Triangle. You have this Club of Rome. That's nothing to do with the Vatican, by the way. But this Club of Rome think tank, that in the 70s, they were actually making a report called Global 2000. Now, in this report of Global 2000, they're mentioning how to prevent us to have a overpopulation on the planet. They were afraid of the population bomb. They actually think that the Earth will not handle it, cannot cope with it, with having too many people on the Earth. So if there's a kind of a biological weapon, like, let's say, AIDS, then it could be very well it is engineered and put in place, tested on people in Africa, on a certain target of people, on purpose to reduce the population. And that they really wish to solve problems in the world where there's wars and they make profit of it. This can also be a reason, because if they would solve problems that we are in peace, that can also generate an overpopulation of the planet. You see? So there are many reasons that you can think of on what is the reason that we have all this mess, all this madness. Is it because that they say, yeah, we need that, because otherwise we have too many people on the planet? Could that be the reason? Now, if you read the Global 2000 report, you will be shocked what they talk about and how they think to solve it. As you know, in China, you're not allowed to have more than one child. So they are very strong in that. So if you're living in China, you're born in China, you are not allowed to have more than one child. And the reason for it is that the Chinese agreed that now they have 1.3 billion people over there. But they agreed that there's a problem to having too many people on the planet. But all those calculations that is based upon this view on the world being overpopulated, that is based upon us using fossil fuels. So when we use the hemp revolution, just Google it, H-E-M-P revolution on Google Video, you will find out that actually you can do with industrial hemp, you can produce plastics, paper, clothes, you can actually have the hemp, what you're going to use to produce it on the ground. The ground doesn't have to be that fertile. You don't have to use chemicals to protect it against aggressors like certain insects that want to eat it. Somehow it's one of the most strongest plant on the planet. It can resist almost any disease. And it is very, it can live forever on the same place. So you can actually, you don't have to change the crops, let's say, in 2 years because of the soil being taking all the minerals and all the nutrition that the plant needs. But with the hemp, it doesn't matter. You can actually build hemp on the same place for 100 years and there's no difference, there's no effect. How is that possible? So it's almost like a gift from God, some people say. And then we don't use it. It was even make legal again during World War II, because, and then they make it later illegal again because of the multinational oil companies. So the oil companies actually are the ones who are the reason for the mentality of that we have a population problem. You see, because if let's say that we believe in human rights for everyone, then what you can do in America should be able that everyone can do it on the planet. And then they going to calculate, let's say that you drive a car, that you have a certain amount of energy that you use to do whatever what you do, where does the energy come from? What do you use to produce that energy in the first place? Do you use coals or fossil fuel? Yes, most of the time they do. And then, of course, you have a car and it wants to have gasoline. So all of it is a calculation of if you want to have human rights and for everyone on this planet cannot deal with the fossil fuel, period. So they take that in their consideration that we have a overpopulation problem because of the mentality of that everybody wants to have a car and everybody wants to have the same rights and therefore we're going to pollute the earth and the earth cannot handle so much humans if they are using fossil fuel. So think again. Global 2000 report written in the 70s, I think 76. I'm not sure. I think it was in 76, maybe earlier, is based upon fossil fuel thinking. You see what I mean? Let's say that we at that time were using free energy technologies from Nikola Tesla and other suppressed inventions. Then the whole calculations of the world of so-called cannot deal with the overpopulation is incorrect. It's not correct. See, so there is a connection between overpopulation problem, having wars not really being solved on purpose, in my opinion, having diseases not being solved on purpose, in my opinion. So we have a strange world, you know, we have a world of that people make profit of wars, people make profit of disease, and I think the moment that that you make a law that a global law that you're not allowed to make profit of wars and you're not allowed to make profit of diseases, then we would have a total different world. But somehow politicians find it an okay thing to do, that we have to have profit on people having disease, and that we have to have profit to make wars, and that that there's a military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about. So we have a military sickness industry, and it is manipulating the media. Think again. You know, we have a combination of two very powerful structures, the military and the pharmaceutical mafia. They both are so powerful that behind the scenes, they have a control over how things are presented in the media. And it's even admitted, you know, it's even admitted by the Pentagon that they actually have a budget how to influence the outlook or view or certain issues in the media. You just do Google Pentagon and how they influence the masses in let's say, in movie making. Even in movies, they have a, let's say, so even, you know, if you think about it, in the 30s, when the cinema and the camera and the movies came to be more popular, Goebbels of the Nazis used that TV screen as a tool to control the masses, to direct a certain particular view, to promote a one-sided view. And they were experts in mind mass manipulation. And then when we watch it, we are saying, oh, that is horrifying how they do that. You know, how Goebbels uses experts on mass psychology, and how easy it is to, you know, to have this one-sided approach and very narrow-minded, and that people fell for it. Now, this mass hypnosis, or Hamas psychology, is something that was starting in the 30s, having a huge impact on the behavior of people, but it never stopped. People think, oh, you know, we won the war against the Nazis. The problem is over. We don't have problems anymore. We don't have mass hypnosis. We don't do a mass psychology. No. We're living in the land of the free. We are actually free. Maybe it's a part of the problem that people think that they are free. As long as you have the illusion that you are free, you do nothing about it. You know, if it turns out to be not the case, if they are masters of mass psychology and mass hypnotists. So I think that the mainstream media is there to convince you how what is supposed to be important and what not. But who says so, and who decides what is news? Now, that in itself is very subjective and very a scary thought, that there are certain people like United Press International and Reuters that they dictate what the news is supposed to be, and that the majority of the Western-based cultures are copying without doing their own research because they have a deadline. They have no time to do research. It's easier to just say, and this is the news, and they see very small letters, you see, that it was brought by you by Reuters. Now, why do I tell this? Because this how we view the world is the same mentality in ufology. In ufology, you have the same rhetoric, what things should be discussed or not, what type of things should be taken serious or not. Those tactics and those way of thinking is being also used in ufology. And what I found of ufology is that UFO research and doing research on contactees and abductees has the same problems as what happened in the 30s when Goebbels were doing mass psychology, mass hypnotist, influencing people, pushing in a certain direction. And I feel that it's also happening in the world of ufology. And why? Because there is a good reason for that. You know, there's an extremely powerful message there. And one of the tactics is that they want to downgrade ufology into a kind of a religion. It is just a belief. Now, that is, of course, ridiculous. There's more, you know, if you study it, more science in ufology than only a belief. There are things that is repeatable. There are things that are physical. You know, you are accepted in a society if you believe that Jesus walks over water. You accepted that he's a son of a virgin. If you believe that, you're still having position and high positions in society, but you are ridiculed if you have facts from pilot cases, radar tapes, police reports of UFOs. You know, then you are ridiculed, but you are accepted if you say, yeah, I believe that Jesus was a son of a God, son of a virgin, and he walks over water. You see, it's so hypocrisy is this. Now, so many idiocy going on, and the question is, why is it that they want to downplay the ufology into in a kind of so-called belief system? It is because that a large amount of people are programmed through the media that, oh, you must believe in those things, like in fairy tales. It's same as the mythology and fairy tales. So what you actually state, there's nothing factual to learn. You know, that's the hidden message. So the hidden message of downgrading the ufology into a kind of so-called belief system is to say that there's nothing factual to be learned about. Now, that's the tactic behind it. And if you know that, then you know why the media is always asking a stupid question, do you believe in UFOs? And if you say, no, I don't believe, oh, you don't believe. But if you say, yes, I believe, then they say, oh, you believe? Same as the, what did I just say? There's nothing to learn, anything factual. You just accept it, but you're not sure. You see, if you believe in Japan, that sounds ridicule. It's kind of ludicrous. Yeah, that's the word what I'm looking for. You just know that Japan exists. Even if you've never been in Japan, you still know that it exists because of circumstantial evidence. You know, you have a lot of people being there, and you talk with them, you met with them, you see photographs. It's all indirect circumstantial evidence. It's not. But if you're there, then you see maybe for yourself the hard evidence. But if you never went there, how can you be sure? You have to go on reports of other people, second-hand people, second-hand recollections. Now, it's the same with ufologies. There's so much overwhelming circumstantial evidence, beyond belief, but it's so that you cannot say, oh, it must be a belief system. You know, is there a belief system about Japan? No. No, there's a knowing. And this tactics of people pushing a certain direction, how to treat ufology and how to look at ufology, that is there's a good reason for that. And knowing that, I was curious if I can learn if there are different things to learn in Europe, you know, that in European cases of ufology are dealt in a different way or a more open way, hopefully. And that you come to a different conclusion than the dominant USA perspective on ufology. I'm not saying that the Americans are bad about it, but they are heavily influenced by certain propaganda techniques. You know, the Project Paperclip, they imported about 2,000 Nazis, SS, and scientists to come over to the United States. And how many people know that the CIA were founded by ex-Nazis? How many people know that? Google the founders of the CIA, the OSS, and were funded and created by former SS of the Nazis. If you know that, then they have certain, they know about tactics, they know about how to control the masses and how to mass hypnosis and mass psychology, because they are the ones who were the architects of the Nazis in the first place, and they helped to found the CIA. How many people know that? But maybe you're not supposed to have interest in that view of the world, you know. It's more comfortable to say the government will protect you. They are there to take care for your interest. Don't think too much. Don't criticize government, because the government will watch over you. Now, that was a statement of a Dutch Bilderberger to shut up about questioning the Bilderbergers. There was a guy who is a high-ranking politician in the Netherlands who were asked, you were there in the Bilderberg secret meetings. You know, how should we look at this, at the secretive, you know, being everything being secretive? And then one of the statements of that was that, you know, to talk about it's something okay that you trust government, please trust government. Please trust us. We will watch over your interests. That's, of course, ridiculous, because that's the same rhetoric and the same mentality that the German fell for in the 30s. And because of this misplaced trust, they can abuse power because of it. Think about it. Government can abuse power as long as they are in the shadows and in secret, you know, as long as there's no light shining on what they do. They have to do it in the dark. And if you have to do something in the dark and you don't want to put it in the spotlight, then you have to say if that is based upon sincerity and openness and transparency and serving the true interest of the public, of the people, or do they actually have sinister plans? And the moment that you think like that, then you must be a conspiracy freak. Now, I believe the opposite. I think you're just critical and down to earth and wanting to know, because they are allowed to put cameras all over the place. They want to implement Big Brother is watching you faster and faster and going into madness almost. You know, implantable chips can be soon be forced into you. They are working on it. An airport, they want to implement implants. Police force maybe must be forced mandatory implants. So we're having this attitude of everybody must be watched, everybody must be monitored, that everybody has no privacy anymore, except the Bilderbergers and the secret societies. They are protected, well protected. Now, that in itself is a paradox, you know. There should be in every mainstream editorial news, there should be cameras there too. In every Bilderberg meeting, there should be in secret society, there should be cameras there too, because they do it to us, so we're going to do it to them too. You see what I mean? So there you see the hypocrisy of how they deal with us. But with ufology, I hope that in the future, I will discuss it more, that I want to have a different approach, different knowledge, and different awareness, not being influenced by this propaganda tactics funded by the pharmaceutical mafia and the Pentagon influences. They have budgets to infiltrate chat rooms, to infiltrate public awareness on through the media, to ridicule systematically on the UFO scene. And then I want to say, okay, if that is not the case, well, what is then the true core information of ufology that is from Europe? And what come to the conclusions? What kind of conclusions can we make on European-based thinking on ufology? Is it different than the United States? If so, what would be the message? Now, that's for the next week. I'm going to round it up because we're almost there. But next week, I will promise you, I will have a European-based thinking on ufology. And not saying that we are better. I only want to say that maybe we come to a different conclusion. So that will be next week. You're listening live to John Kulis from the Netherlands of UntoldMysteries.com. Not with an S, but with a T. UntoldMysteries.com. And you're listening live on bbsradio.com, and hope you enjoyed it. Bye-bye.